Very good. So welcome everybody to this wonderful 2021 November retreat. Is this something which I... Anything for me?
No.
Oh, unfair. So this is the first talk of the evening. And is everybody... We're supposed to be here? Here? Yeah, close enough. And also, people listening from Singapore? Are they?
Yeah, and everywhere else.
Can you please say that you're listening in Singapore if you're there? I can't hear you. Anyway, everywhere else, wherever you are. So, there will be opportunities afterwards to interact. But for this evening, I was just mentioning to somebody earlier that when you do a talk like live, face to face, like the people here in Perth, it's got a totally different feeling than when you give that talk online. There's not the same degree of social interaction when you do it online over something like Zoom or whatever, so I apologise if there's not that direct interaction. I found that out the other day, this is mostly for those people in Singapore, that when I told a joke online, I hadn't got a clue whether people understood it or not. It's a bit hard. Anyway, for those who want to know that joke, many of you know it already, is why don't sharks in Australia bite lawyers? Why don't sharks bite lawyers? And the answer is professional courtesy. people here got it. But sometimes you don't know until you get a letter from a lawyer in Singapore that they're suing me. But of course, everybody in the Bodhinyana in Singapore, that's what they called it, Bodhinyana Singapore. It's very nice that I can serve in a little way. I still remember you all. I remember just all the wonderful retreats we've given there, the wonderful talks, the wonderful all sorts of stuff. Maybe soon after COVID just disappears totally, we can start doing similar. However, many people here say, no. We want to keep a little bit of COVID in Perth so that I'm not allowed to go overseas. So you keep me here. But anyway, this retreat, as many of you know, is learning how to relax to the max. You may think that's a simple statement, but many of those simple statements, if you really look at them and focus on them, they mean a huge amount. Because a lot of time people don't know how to relax. Strange. Sometimes they can stay at home and sleep all day, but that's not relaxing at all. To allow the body to get so peaceful, so relaxed, it's like you've just been to a spa. And when I said that to some people, they asked me back, they said, look, I can never do that. I can never feel that beautiful sense. I don't know really what I'm talking about because I've never been to a spa, but I imagine that's what it's like, but this is much more cheap. That's why people always come to the Buddhist Society of Western Australia, because we're very good, but also we're very cheap. It's true. Actually, we've got our treasurer here on this retreat, so I better not talk like this, otherwise he'll tell me to put the prices up. But nevertheless, the idea of really relaxing the body, allowing it to be still and peaceful and expand and feel very, very good, it's a wonderful thing to learn. And I often sometimes wonder, I'm 70 years of age now, and one of the things which I've noticed being 70, I haven't shared this with the people in Singapore and other places, that the more birthdays you have, the longer you live. That's science. Okay, I've got the nun started now, I'm sorry. But what it means is, where you don't take, you know, negativity seriously, but you make fun of it, and you allow just... I do this when I go into hospitals to visit people who are getting sick, or are sick, or are dying, is, you know, to tell funny stories. And that actually has a huge benefit to people. What it does, it just makes them just relax more and enjoy themselves more. And just when they relax and enjoy themselves, it does mean that the body can start its healing processes much more effectively. And that's one of the things which you learn from meditation. It's just a simple thing, but it's a great thing when, you know, we have things like COVID around. How can we make sure that we're healthy and strong and live long? And, you know, this is one way of doing it. It's learning about your body, how it works. And when you know how your body works, you know, you're with it all the time. You just need to notice it, watch it. You know, sometimes it's like in those old days when you'd have a car or a motorbike, you'd take it apart to find out how it works. Or, you know, take the old radios in those old days, take it apart and find out how it works. Because when you actually do that, you learn about these things. Same as you learn about your body, how it works. You can feel it. And when you learn how your body works, that is the mindfulness, awareness of your body. When you start to be aware of your body, you also notice that when you do something, your attitudes, you can actually do some almost like controlling of your body. You know, I learned when I was a kid how to raise my arm and put it down again. How did you learn that? How did you learn to walk? It took a lot of awareness, trial and error, until you could actually do it efficiently. But a lot of time people stop there. Why can't we go a bit further and know how to deal with the inner part of our body? I love that with like digestion. Simply because as a monk, actually people are really good these days, you know, after all these years I find out the food I like. I just don't like it. It's not just that. It's what I can digest well. And that's really important, to learn what you can digest, which means you can feel much more healthy with that type of food. When you learn what you can digest and what you can feel healthy with, you don't get so many stomach aches and other problems of your guts. You know when you should rest and how long you should rest. You know how much you should exercise. And sometimes people tell me that I don't exercise enough. I do. Every morning I do my 10 push-ups. 1, 2, 3, 4. And I make that point because it's not just physical health, it's also the emotional health as well. That emotional health, if you do the 10 push-ups in front of a mirror, that creates some happiness and joy inside of you. And that happiness and joy inside of you, that is incredible, powerful for your health and happiness. Little by little, we learn from our mindfulness and experimenting. See how you feel. You'd actually find that this is a way to create a very healthy body. And when you have a healthy body, oh, all these lovely stories. I love telling these stories, but because they're real. And they're personal stories. Because they're personal, I know exactly what happened, why, and I don't exaggerate. I'm a monk. If I do exaggerate, I will tell you beforehand. That's usually in a joke. But this is a true story. Over in, where was I? In South Korea. And it's up in the mountains. So we're doing some sort of ceremony up there, which they invited me to come along and give a few talks. Ajahn Gunhar came up there as well, which many of you know him. And that up there in the mountains, I was going to go on to give a live interview on national TV in South Korea, because the monks are highly respected. I won't get on national TV in Australia. Be lucky to get on the community TV channel. But nevertheless, on the national TV, and actually there was one time I almost got on national TV, and that was when I told a story in the recent retreat, the Thai retreat, that when we had our big bushfire here in Bodhinyana Monastery, crown fire. That's, you know, crown fires, all the trees, you know, it's, the fire's right at the very top. And the trees don't sort of burn, they explode. Bang! There you go. And I usually say bang very loudly. It's because it's the first retreat, first night of the retreat, and sometimes people get tired. So I try and make sure I keep you awake. Bang! And it was the hottest day ever in Western Australia that day. It was 46.45 degrees before the fire came in the late afternoon. That was really hot. And so Ajahn Jacaro was supposed to be in charge, but he was down south somewhere. So I was in charge there. And yeah, the fire came, we did all the right things. But eventually we had to evacuate, so we evacuated. When we evacuated to the, it was the Southwest Highway, it was the emergency place where the state emergency services and other people were there. First thing they did when I got there, they gave me a sandwich. I said, "Oh God, it's in the afternoon, stop torturing me anymore." And then they wanted to do a TV interview for Channel 7 or Channel 9, I forget which it was. And when I did the TV interview, they just asked me, "What happened? What happened? Were you afraid? Where did the fire come from? What happened?" And, you know me, I just, "Oh, just the fire came. Came from this direction, we went over there, and the fire came over that direction, and they went over here, and then we came down here." And then what happened next was a week or two later, they gave me a call from the TV station and said, "The lady who interviewed me said, I can't get you out of my head." He said, "I often do these interviews on these disasters." And he said, "You were just so cool about it." And I can't understand how you can be so cool when your life was in danger. And he said, "I want to invite you on the current show I'm working for." I said, "What's that?" He said, "It was like Darren Hinch." Hinch? No, Hinch?
Hinch.
Yeah, it was Hinch, yeah. Darren Hinch, the Hinch Report. I don't watch TVs, I don't know what that was. And I asked some people who watch TV, said, "Don't go on that. They'll tear you apart." It's supposed to be very negative, finding all the faults in people. And they wouldn't let me go on. Anyway, it's close. Almost went on there. But I also remember that afterwards a crew came from Curtin University, from the psychology department, to give us all an interview about the psychological trauma of being through a very, very dangerous bushfire. And then afterwards I said, they interviewed a few people, including me, said, "How did the interviews go?" I said, "They were hopeless. You guys are really weird." They did. They asked, "So, you know, do you wake up in the middle of the night dreaming of fire? Do you go sweating and just..." "No, it's just the fire, that's all." But anyway, what it shows is that even psychologically, you develop a huge, powerful inner resilience, not just physical health, but emotional health through the practice of meditation. And it's sometimes very hard to describe this, but the simile which I've used for many years now is a simile of a guitar string. If you stretch a guitar string, you really pull it, bing! A small thing hits it and it makes a very loud, high-pitched sound. You loosen the tension on a guitar string, bing. It doesn't sound so loud and it's lower pitch. When it's totally loose, it doesn't even make a sound. That's what I was talking about with the resilience, with a big danger like a fire. Why do things happen in your life? You're so loose, so relaxed, boom. You can hardly hear it. And that's a very nice simile to what resilience is, emotional resilience. even like to the COVID. So we've had a couple of lockdowns here, but lockdown was a lockdown anyway, just like going on retreat. We monks are used to that, no worries. And you know, during that period of when you had lockdowns, especially in places like Singapore and other places, you know that people would always complain before lockdown periods, before COVID, they never had enough time in their life. They were rushing to do things. Now, you've got time. You can't go to work. Yay! You can't go visit your friends. Yay! You can't, what else can't you do? You can't do anything. Yay! You can always see the positive in things. You've got time, you can rest. You can meditate. You do all sorts of interesting things. Why not? Why not look at the positive side of things? So that's one of the reasons why. It's great that we have periods where we can stop and look at our lives, how it's going, with a positive mind. Not looking at all the things which have gone wrong, but looking at all the good things which you can do. So anyway, that's what we did over here. And this is actually what you learn in meditation, how you can relax no matter what is happening in your life. And if you can relax like that, you find you become far more efficient, relaxed, younger looking. No, just even years ago, I remember this monk, his ex-partner, before he became a monk, had a nice partner, and he went off to become a monk, and then he disrupted. I don't know what's happened to him these days. But anyway, I remember when he first ordained as a monk, he used to work for, I think, the Western Power in some desk job somewhere. So he had a lot of stress, and that's one of the reasons he became a monk. But I remember going to the Red Cross one day to give blood. Remember that, because a couple of the Anagarikas of Bodhinyana gave blood today. I remember going to give blood with him, and you know, it took my blood pressure and stuff, and there's no problem there. But then they took his blood pressure and they stopped. They said, "Your blood pressure has gone down significantly. What have you been doing?" And then the nurse looked up and saw that he had a bald head and a brown robe. And she said, "You haven't been meditating, have you?" Yeah, he said, "Oh, that's it." So just went and took his blood. It's just so well known that, you know, this actually lessens your stress levels, makes you healthier. And that's one of the reasons why you're here. You don't have to worry about a thing. Just allow this meditation retreat just to happen, relaxing to the max. And the first thing to say about that, relaxing to the max, actually not the first thing, I've said too many things already. The relaxing to the max means when you go to bed tonight, please relax when you go into your bed. Don't try and force it. Don't try and get enlightened in the first couple of days. Otherwise you'll get bored and not know what to do in the next sort of 7 days. It's a 9-day retreat. Don't rush it. So you go back, and what you can do, which is very powerful, is what I do. I ask my body, "Body, what do you want?" I ask it. And this is not being schizophrenic or anything. This is just being sensitive to the body. And you get sort of answers. The body says, "I need to stretch my legs. I need to go for a walk. I need just to lay down. I need to relax, rest." When you get mindful of your body in this way, and you follow what the body asks you to do, sensible things, it's amazing just with that kindness and wisdom and mindfulness of your own body, how you can keep it healthy and well. little things. Like this is a retreat, and sometimes when you come on a retreat, you find your sleep patterns change. Of course they will. This is not at work, it's not at home. This is a beautiful, calm, peaceful place. And so, what should you do? It's one of the questions which always come up in the question box in the evening time. I go to bed at night time, but I can't sleep. What should I do? And I try and find out who asked those questions, because they're the ones during the meditation periods. They're very sleepy. They can sleep up here during the talks, but they can't sleep in the huts. And of course the old joke was, said, well, when you go to your rooms to sleep tonight, just try and meditate. Then you fall fast asleep. Thank you, Valerie. I was just telling Ajahn Bamali today, it's nice to have you listening to talks because you always laugh at the right places and you give me encouragement. I know you can't stop it, can you? So anyway, but when you're here, you're trying to meditate, you fall asleep. Why? It is really because the people try too much. When you go to bed tonight, you try to go to sleep. When you're here, you try to meditate. It's a trying which is the error. Instead, you ask your body, what do you need to do right now? How do you need to be peaceful? Do you need to go to bed? If the body says yes, take it to bed. If you wake up in the morning and, you know, it's not the time to come to the hall, let's say 2 o'clock in the morning, what do you do? You ask your body, what do you want to do? And often your body says, I want to meditate. Fine, meditate. You know, many years ago, I was just talking with the monks before I came here this evening. We're talking many years ago. I was visiting United States, and I got this invitation. I was surprised by it. It said, oh, Ajahn Brahm, you're here in the United States. Can you come to see me for... I want to ask you some questions. And it was from Joseph Goldstein. He sort of passed that message on. And he's quite a well-known Vipassana teacher over in the United States. So I made a point to go and see him. And have a pipe. He was asking me all these questions about how to meditate in the deep meditations of jhanas. And he said, you know, that his teacher said to him that he should learn a bit more about this part of meditation. And it was amazing. The first time I thought he wasn't interested. But it's wonderful that how this actually happens is you ask your body, how are you? What do you need? You have some kindness, some relinquishing your sense of control and trying to tell your body what to do. A lot of times we do that. We tell our body, no, it's too early, 2 o'clock in the morning, shouldn't get up. Sometimes I get my best meditations when I'm not supposed to. Ridiculous times. And I've experimented like that throughout my whole life, especially my monastic life. You know, you sort of go out and you're doing your service, looking after people, and you come back and you're really tired and exhausted. So what do? Instead of going to take a rest, meditate. You get some great meditations when you're not really supposed to. Just sometimes the body and the mind is just in the right position, just in the right place, the right time. But sometimes it's not the usual time you're supposed to get deep meditations. But you meditate anyway. And your mind has a wonderful opportunity, wonderful times. So a lot of time, don't just restrict yourself. So I have to get up at this time, I have to go to bed at that time, I have to meditate at this time. That's one of the reasons why I remember telling Joseph, that's the reason I mentioned this story, that let's say when I teach retreats, we don't have schedules. We do write the schedules down there. But quite frankly, I don't know what Leha told you, you can get up any time. You can go to bed any time. You can meditate any time. You know when the talks are. You know when the questions and answers are. You know where lunch time is and where breakfast time is. But remember, don't be a prisoner of the schedule. Instead, just be kind to your body. Be wise. When I started doing this, started experimenting with no schedules, I found out that people meditated more. They actually got up earlier. And they stayed up later. Why is that? It's obvious if you just contemplate it. If you know you have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and somebody's going to check you, then you go to bed early, even if you're not tired, just in case. And it's the same, you know, if you, you know, you want to stay up later, or you want to get up earlier, but you think, oh my goodness, you know, I can't go to sleep after this. Of course, that interferes with the natural process of the body and the mind. It's much better to be wise to your body. What does it need right now? And this was one of those little examples that when people were having difficulty meditating, I used to do this so often to people when they're having difficulty. They said it was just so hard to meditate, they couldn't get their mind quiet, they couldn't sleep at night, they couldn't do anything. And so I told them, just go back to your room, go into your bed, and go to sleep. So I can't. It's only sort of 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's only 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's the wrong time. So go and take a rest. And I actually ordered them, please go and take a rest, go to bed. When you go to bed, don't set your alarm. In fact, see if you can hide your clock so you can't see it. And then just have a rest. Whenever you get up, you get up. Maybe take a shower, have a cup of tea or water or juice, whatever you like, and then come and meditate. And they'd always get their best meditations after following that advice. They were pushing themselves too hard. And then sometimes you don't realize how much you push yourself, trying to get somewhere, trying to achieve something, having all these ideas, I'm only supposed to sit a certain amount of time. Don't think like that. Keep it natural. In other words, you ask your body and mind, and you'll find sometimes your mind will say, no, I need to rest now. Fine. Sometimes it will say at the weirdest times, no, I really need to get some meditation now. And then you'll find when you work with your body and mind, rather than against it, you'll find you get some great meditations. You realize just what the mistake was. You were just pushing it according to some artificial schedule. And it's been like that for me for years. And sometimes you get up early in the morning, really early in the morning, and think, oh, this is really early. Oh, what the heck, you just meditate. Sometimes you just feel sleepy and just have a nap during the day. You get healthy, you have some great meditations, simply because it's like my body and I are friends. We work together. So my body looks after me, I look after my body. The same with my mind. We're friends, we're not afraid of one another. So I can understand my mind. So we work together. When you think what meditation is, you're relaxing the body so you get healthy. And sometimes you can meditate for hours. It doesn't make any sense, but you do. And sometimes your mind is just so comfortable. You can sit here and just enjoy this moment, and you don't get restless anymore. The reason why people get restless in meditation is because they're not happy being here. Such a simple statement, but it's so true. If in this moment you're content, happy to be here, what more do you need? If you really are happy to be here, you let go of controlling. Desire and will vanish. So we learn how to be happy. This is good enough. May not be the best, but it's pretty good. And the happiness to be here means you're not struggling to try and get somewhere else. Even in good places, many people, you hear me talk about things like jhanas, and sometimes I explain them and say, wow, that's what I want. That's one of the reasons why we don't charge people, you know, they've got sort of room booking bonds. Because otherwise people would actually say, well, I didn't get jhana, I want my money back. We don't pay money, so you can't get it back. But instead, it just shows that many people meditate to try and get something instead of trying to relax and take that relaxation to very, very deep and profound levels. So your body relaxes so much, you're so peaceful. You know what happens next? You get joy coming up. And that's something which a lot of people don't realize. The joy and happiness, which comes from a relaxed body. That's why people go to spas. They go to massages. They go to these beautiful places like Singapore. I've got to say that because to relax by the beach somewhere. And so that means that in that relaxation, that you feel happiness, you feel joy in the body. And that's what happens with the mind too. When the mind gets very peaceful and still relaxed, you feel some joy. All that joy really is just your mind is not struggling anymore. Your body is at ease. It is relaxation. What is relaxation? Again, I already mentioned the resilience when the guitar string isn't tight. It is when you don't want anything in the whole world. Sometimes you imagine that. You're sitting here in Jhana Grove. You manage to get in on this retreat, which is not an easy thing to do, apparently. Now you're in on this retreat. Ah, you've made it. What more do you want? Ah, I'm here. So enjoy this moment. Relax with it. Don't push yourself trying to attain something else. Because if you do, you will get tense. And if you get tense, you'll get disappointed. And you'll think you can't meditate. Of course, you can't meditate. Ajahn Brahm can't meditate. If I try and do it, it all goes wrong. I've done that so many years when I started being a monk. What's the problem? I was trying to get somewhere rather than trying to be here. If you're being here, you can't try to be here. Trying is sometime in the future. If you're just being here, in this moment, getting to know this moment, relaxing with this moment, being a friend of this moment, you don't go anywhere. Sometimes I ask people just to make the point, in your whole life so far, when has been the most peaceful, beautiful, happiest, most content moments in your life so far? And a lot of times, before I became a monk, because I'm not supposed to say all those deep things you get in meditation, but before I became a monk, there were places like just being by a lake somewhere by yourself and just being content, not really wanting anything in the whole world. I remember one of my earliest experiences of that was having a half day off school. It was in Hammersmith. I'd done my homework during the lunch break, and I was free. I had no responsibilities, nothing to complete, nothing to do, nowhere I had to be, no appointments which I had to live up to. I had a whole free afternoon. I remember walking out of that school and thinking, wow, this is so happy. I had nothing to on my schedule. Totally free. And I remember that experience. There was nothing to desire because I'd done all my homework, everything was finished, and that was really cool. I remembered it wasn't I was rich. Well, it wasn't that I had lots of friends. I did have lots of friends, but not with me that afternoon. I was by myself. It was a wonderful feeling of freedom. Nothing was wrong, nothing was missing, nothing needed to be fixed up. Everything was just fixed up as it was. The idea of having nothing to fulfill, nothing to make happen, nothing to mend, nothing to do at all. It's total peace. And it was such a powerful feeling, I just recall that to this day. Honestly. And this gives you an indication what meditation is all about. Learn to be so happy if a magician came and said, I'll give you 3 wishes, what would you like? You say, nothing, thank you. That idea of contentment, this is enough, this is good enough. Now, I think you can sort of get that now, but imagine doing that when you're meditating. You're sitting here and you're aware, this is all I want in the whole world, just being here. This is good enough for me. I don't want anything except just stillness, peace, being here. All these other little things just push aside. Being here. What happens when you're being here? The mindfulness just grows. It gets stronger. The peace gets more powerful, more tangible. And the happiness, it gets really strong. It grows by itself. You don't do anything. The only thing you can do is interfere and stop it happening. You learn how to let go. In other words, you don't do it. You can't meditate. Ajahn Brahm can't meditate. Ajahn Brahm disappears. It's called like disappearing. You even got a word for it in Pali, just viraga. Things just vanish. They disappear, they're niroda. They cease. And you find out you don't do anything, you have to stop doing. Allow things to settle down. It's not just your body being still. It's your mind being still. You don't move. Don't aspire for anything. Don't try and get rid of anything. This is good enough. You stay in this good enough and it gets better. And sometimes it's hard to get similes. One simile I developed years ago was like going on a journey. And you get tired. And so the only place to sit down on is this stone bench. And this stone bench is really cold when you sit down on. It's not even surface, it's rough and all over the place. And at first it's very uncomfortable when you sit on this stone bench. It's cold, rough, rugged and just... But after a while you tend to warm it up. And after a while that stone bench becomes really smooth. And after a while, that stone bench is like it develops upholstery. And it becomes one of the most comfortable benches you could ever sit on. It changes this present moment, just being here. So you stay here wherever you are. It becomes comfortable and pleasant and still all by itself. You just sit, keep on sitting here, and once it starts to work, once you can start to feel that happiness and satisfaction in your mind as you're meditating, just sitting here, just doing nothing, That's one of the reasons it's wonderful. Sometimes people think that monks don't do very much, but we do a huge amount of work. And it's great to be able to meditate, close my eyes, bye-bye world. You don't have to do anything at all. Time off. I just mentioned in a letter I was writing to some friends, you know, Christmas time, and I said, look, it's really hard being a monk. I can't retire. I tried it a few times. I asked, can I retire now, committee? They say, no. One of the reasons is the older you become, the more wise people think you are. It's true, you know, you become like holy. That's why the other day, the Armadale group on last Tuesday, I gave the talk for them. Said, who's giving the talk tonight? I said, Ajahn Donut is giving the talk. And that's one of my epithets, Ajahn Donut. So why do you call him Ajahn Donut? There's three reasons why they call me Ajahn Donut. One is because I'm round. Two, because I'm sweet. Is that true? I hope so. Number three, because I'm holy. You're holy, number two. But nevertheless, little by little, you notice how to go into that hole. Holiness, I can't retire. Some of the things I say, again, people think is profound. Even if they don't, even if it's rubbish, which I say, they think is profound, and they're not advanced enough to understand it. If I forget things, it's not dementia, it's just that I let go a lot. But no, what you're really doing is learning how to not hold on to things, anything. And just stay here. Allow things to vanish and disappear. Go deep inside. How can you go deep inside when you're holding things? You go deep, deep, deep inside. It happens all by itself. You get some beautiful meditations. One of the things here, if anybody does get a nice deep meditation, just don't worry about sort of getting up and going back to your room or eating or drinking or whatever. Just stay here, enjoy it. Because that sometimes happens, and I hope it happens on this retreat later on when we get deep into the meditation. Sometimes people, it gets lunchtime, they're sitting here after the talk, just meditating peacefully. They know it's time for lunch, they don't go. They're still meditating peacefully here. Why not? You can eat any time. But meditating, when it starts to work, enjoy it to the max. Don't disturb, you're perfectly safe. You're sitting here really peaceful. Why get up? Stay. Have some lunch later on. So little by little we respect that ability to totally relax and become still. So you get very, very, very peaceful and stay as long as you like. Stillness. Instead of saying concentration, stillness, way better, far more accurate to the meaning of the word samadhi. That's what we're doing here. Learning how to be still. This is one of the reasons why we have the retreat center here. It's a very quiet place. It's a comfortable place. You have your own rooms and toilets. Be careful with the doors. Please open them quietly. Close them quietly. Burglars can do that very efficiently. I don't see why you can't. And if you do need a cup of tea or something in the morning time, Please don't go. As you stir your coffee, whatever it is, you can do it quietly. As quiet as you can. That becomes your expression of care for the people in the same cottage as you. And number two is, as you come in and out invisibly. So you don't make too much noise when you're here. Because the place is just so beautiful and quiet, it can be so easily disturbed. So you respect the place. Noble silence isn't just not speaking. It's just moving quietly, hardly making any noise at all. If you can do that with your body, next do that with your mind. Don't make noise inside. You don't need to take notes about what's happening inside your mind. Listen to nature. Don't talk back at it inside your head. You don't need to take notes about what happened by trying to remember everything. Let it happen quietly. The most important things which happen in your mind you remember very easily. Little by little you become peaceful, calm. And that becomes the most wonderful thing. You just put things down. Let things go. Not carried things with you. In this moment, being peaceful, being kind. You find that means you're not afraid of this present moment. The breath will come up by itself when it's ready. The joy and happiness, sometimes I make a lot of the joy and happiness in meditation and people complain they haven't felt it yet. Don't worry. Just be happy not having any happiness. In other words, don't go searching for it. This is not a shop. It's not a supermarket where these things are on the shelves. You can pick them. They just come to you. That's one of the wonderful things about meditation. You don't do anything. You sit there, mindful. You don't disturb this whole practice. You've got 9 days to be peaceful. Enjoy every moment of this. You find the fastest way is not worrying about time. In this moment, being silent. Not just silent outside, but silent inside. Really peaceful. The whole place, can you hear? Not what I'm saying, but what this Jhana Grove retreat center is saying. Listen to nature. So calm. So peaceful. When you don't have words in the mind, you don't have restlessness in the mind, you really appreciate this so much. And the place like opens up to you. You open up to it. The peace in the place. Little things like when you come into this hall, what do you notice when you come into this hall? Things. Walls, people, floors and ceilings. What about the emptiness in this room, which is far greater than the things in this room? What's between everything? Why do we keep missing that? We always tend to focus on things. Now I ask you to focus on what's between the things. Not where the cottages are, where your rooms are, what's between everything? The calmness, the stillness, the emptiness. And little by little, that is so peaceful. So go slowly through this retreat period. Go mindfully and go kindly through this time. Was it that little poem which I I wrote in the opening to that first book which I wrote. Grant yourself a moment of peace. And you'd realize how foolishly you've hurried around. Learn to be silent. You've noticed how you talk far too much. Learn to be kind. Your judgment of others and yourself has been far too severe. Very simple saying. Slow down. Enjoy this place. This is not a boot camp for meditators. It's a place where you have kindness, peace, stillness. Get out of the way and let it happen. Okay, I think that's enough of a talk for this evening. Oh, come on, how long have I been teaching you all these years? Whatever you do, give it everything you've got. Are you ready? 1, 2, 3. Sadhu! 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 Hee hee hee. 3 hees afterwards.